What moves you? Why do you get up in the morning? What drives you to do whatever it is you do every day? What makes you happy? If this thing happened, what would it be that makes you happy? What makes you sad? Are there things that just really bring you down? What are the things that make you angry? That right now, if I mention them, you're ready to fight. What gets you fired up? Gets the blood going. Makes the veins pop out. Makes the eyes stand open. If you had only two options for all of those questions, money or morality, which would it be? Now, maybe you know even something related to it, something spiritual along the lines of the morality, or something materialistic along the lines of money, or you know, whatever, you can see the point. How would you answer when dealing with those things? In Luke chapter 12, as Lake just read for us, Jesus said something that we really need to note today. We should always note, I know, of course. But there's some reasons why, or a reason why, we need to really keep this in mind today and this week. In Luke 12, beginning of verse 13, a man approached Jesus with a demand. And then I want you to notice how Jesus responded to what the man said. Luke 12, starting at 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, so now he first talked to the one man, now he directs his attention to the whole crowd that was there listening to this. "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' So he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then, whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" I want you to notice five things about this text. Number one, the man did not know or understand the purpose of Jesus. Perhaps in his mind, he had the best judge and arbitrator that there could be. So he goes to Jesus with a demand, not a request. "Teacher, this is what you need to do. You tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." This man did not understand why Jesus Christ had left heaven and come to the earth. He saw it strictly on a material level. Because that's what was most important to him, rather than on a spiritual level, which should have been most important to him. Secondly, the man was covetous. That's why Jesus said to the whole crowd, as well as that man, take heed and beware of covetousness. Why is that? Because my life does not consist in how many things I possess. That's not what life is about. Life is about greater things. It's about things that are above and things that are inward. So he warned, you be careful of covetousness. Covetousness is what drove Judas to betray the Son of God. In fact, in Colossians chapter 3, I believe it's verse 5, Paul said that covetousness is idolatry. Why would Paul make such a statement? Because once I get a covetous heart, there's something that I want, I'll do what it takes to get it. Just like with our God, who we recognize as our God, we'll do what it takes to please Him. We'll do what it takes to have a relationship with Him. That's why we were baptized, correct? I died to myself, so somebody buried me, and then they brought me up out of the water, now I'm a new person. Well, when covetousness captures your heart, that's what happens. We're willing to die to self so I can get what I want. Beware of it. Life is not about material things. It's not about money. Thirdly, the man placed material things over spiritual things. Just the fact that he came to Jesus with this demand shows that. And then, of course, Jesus, knowing what was in the heart of the man, then warning about covetousness and materialism, he was showing this man valued what he could see with his eyes, what he could feel with his hands, and so on, more than what he could believe in his heart. Number four, the man did not know the brevity of life. Okay, I've got what I want now. I'm set up so I can eat, drink, and be merry. I can take my ease. Soul, be at ease. He thought he had forever to live. He thought he had tomorrow. But he did not even have tomorrow. That's why Jesus said that God said, fool. You know, this night, your life is required of you. You're going to die tonight. Did the man have a heart attack? Was he killed, murdered, or what? We don't know, and it doesn't matter. He thought he had a long time ahead of him on the earth. And that's the way he had built his life, preparing for a long life on the earth, rather than a long time, which is forever, in eternity. When shall we die? We don't know. Especially when we're young, we do think we have forever. We really do. I remember hearing older people say that when I was younger. And when I look back at it now, they were right. I really thought I had forever. But we don't. And number five, the man was poor toward God. That's why in verse 21, Jesus said, so is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Meaning that if I do lay up treasure for myself, I'm poor toward God. Therefore, what ought to drive me, what ought to move me, what ought to fire me up and so on, is that which makes me rich toward God. What can I do to be rich toward my Heavenly Father? And am I doing something to hurt that? That should make me sad, even angry at myself. Now, please keep all these things in mind. this week. Maybe I even should have given this sermon last Sunday. Because yesterday, I don't know if you received it or not, but if you're registered to vote, you got your ballot in the mail. So if you do vote, you'll probably do it this week. Please keep in mind what Jesus just taught us in Luke 12. I would also like to address some other very important issues. The first one is this: abortion. When Brother Dave Miller was here with our Silencing of God seminar, he showed us that since January 22nd, 1973, we have shed the innocent blood legally of over 50 million unborn children. Now, I know abortion went on January 21st, 1973, and all before that. But now, it's a law. It's allowable by law. And that ought to keep, we ought to keep that in mind as we consider the running of this nation and the influence that we have as Christians. Read the newspaper, listen to the radio news, watch the television news, get it on the internet, whatever way you do it, and there's a lot of things that a lot of people think are important, and there's a lot of things that people think influence the way a nation is. But remember, Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world. You have more influence on this nation, according to our Heavenly Father, than the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, all the members of Congress, and I can go on and on with all that stuff. More than the Supreme Court and so on. But how? Well, I don't know that I know all the ways how, but I think I maybe have some ideas. But all I know is Jesus Christ, who came from heaven and has observed every nation in history, said to his disciples, and now that includes us, that we are the ones who bring about the flavoring and preserving agent of America, in this case. And in the dark world, we are the ones who provide the light. We can change people. Let me show you how important this is. In Psalm 106, the 106th Psalm, you'll find a psalm that is about the history of Israel. Why Israel prospered and why Israel failed. And listen to what the psalmist said, starting at verse 34 of Psalm 106. When God sent Israel into the land of Canaan, He wanted them to wipe out all the people there. They didn't do it. So in verse 34 it says, they did not destroy the peoples whom the Lord had commanded them, but they mingled with the Gentiles and learned their works. And He'll tell us in a moment what one of those works was. They served their idols, which became a snare to them. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons and shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan. And the land was polluted with blood. Thus they were defiled by their own works and played the harlot by their own deeds. Therefore, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against His people, so that He abhorred His own inheritance. And He gave them into the hand of the Gentiles, and those who hated them ruled over them. Their enemies also oppressed them, and they brought And they were brought into subjection under their hand. Israel killed their own children so that they could have what they wanted. To them, it was worth it. It was worth sacrificing their own children. It's not as though they went and kidnapped other people's children and sacrificed them. They sacrificed their own children so that they could have what they wanted in the flesh. And God was not happy about that. I don't think God is happy about the shedding of innocent blood at any time, whether it was in Israel or whether it's in modern America. Well, how come then we haven't had happen to us what happened to Israel? Because you're here. Because you're the salt of the earth and the light of the world. God looks at our nation and He sees some bad things, but He also sees some good things. And one of the many good things that He sees are active, faithful Christians. Please don't give up your Christianity. For it will affect not only your soul, but perhaps the soul of America. The second matter, homosexuality. As you know, this is a very hot issue, and I think it was just this past week or maybe the week before, a third state in the United States of America legalized what they're calling same-sex marriage. Okay, one of them was California, and we have a tendency to say, oh, that's California, that could never happen here. And the other two were Massachusetts and Connecticut. That's way out in the East Coast, man, that won't happen here. Well, let me tell you something. I've never seen a chart or a rating or whatever, but my guess is that Oregon, if they were to rate it, would be one of the most liberal states in America on matters of morality in particular. And now that a third state has done it, I would not be surprised if that encouraged certain people here. And well, you already know some of what's happened here and how the battle that's going on. Someone may say, well, we've already got it. Well, yeah, we're pretty close. But listen to 1 Timothy chapter 1, where we might see, well, is this an issue? Should this be a political issue? Is it a matter of law or not? Well, it was with Paul. And it certainly was with the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and those surrounding them, because they evidently allowed it there and the cities don't exist anymore. In 1 Timothy 1, starting at verse 8, Paul said, "But we know that the law is good if one uses it lawfully, knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous person, but for the lawless and insubordinate, for the ungodly and for sinners, for the unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers." Well, right away you could probably see that, yeah, a lot of those things should be matters of law. I think everybody would say that. Even those who are on the most liberal side of the spectrum when it comes to political issues. But Paul continued, "For fornicators, for sodomites, for kidnappers, for liars, for perjurers, and if there is any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine, according to the glorious gospel of the blessed God, which was committed to my trust." Well, that's why God has laws against homosexuality. Because it's not according to the way He created things. He set in order, at the very beginning, laws of creation. And homosexuality does not fit in with those natural laws. Well, obviously, they can't reproduce themselves by simply homosexual means. I know that there's other things they're doing to bring that about, but they're all unnatural means. Number three, looking for others to pay my way. Looking for others to pay my way. In Galatians chapter 6, Paul showed where my responsibility lies concerning myself. Now, he did say in verse 3 that we should seek to bear one another's burdens, and that's good, of course. That's the law love is all about. But he then said in verse 5 that each one is to bear his own burden. I should do everything I can in my power and my ability to take care of myself. Now, you know, sometimes you just can't. And that's where verse 3 kicks in. That we should be able to rely upon one another. There's just those times when we need it. Every single one of us at some time or another, whether it was in a material way or a spiritual way, you know, we've just needed someone to help us. It might even have been something as simple as listening. But those things being true does not mean that therefore I can give up everything as far as personal responsibility and accountability is concerned, and now it's all upon you. And that is certainly something that happens politically. Lower my taxes, but raise his so he can take care of me. Well, you know, I know that's a big complicated thing and there's all kinds of stuff involved in all that, but my simple point is this. What is it that I'm looking for? Am I looking to be a man or a woman as much as God wants me to be? Or am I simply trying to be a child of the state? As the state seeks to have more and more almost like parental rights over all Americans. Number four, what exalts or lowers a nation? I've not had the opportunity to listen to any of the political debates, whether presidential or vice presidential. I do hear some of the news and so on, but there's a lot of things that we hear will make our nation better and a lot of things that will make it worse. But I haven't heard yet, now maybe you've heard it, but I haven't heard yet what is stated in Proverbs 14. Nathan knows already where I'm going because his dad, who, as probably some of you know, was in the state legislature in California and was also a judge, he must have preached this to his family all the time because I think if Nathan forgot every single verse in the book of Proverbs, he'd never forget this one. It's been ingrained in him, and well, it should be. Good job, George House. Proverbs 14:34, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. That means not just Israel, of course Solomon being the one who wrote that, a king of Israel, but to any group of people. You legalize sin, or just the nation as a whole goes into sin, and it reproaches that nation. Now, you can have the best military in the world, the best colleges in the world, the best medicine in the world, the best education in the world, the best infrastructure in the world, and so on. But if sin is allowed to have free reign, it's a reproach to that nation. And that's what God thinks about more. He thinks about righteousness and sin. If a nation promotes righteousness, then even if they don't have the best things in the world, God will promote them. I'd like to now, towards the end here, give some things just for you to remember. No matter what happens, whether you vote or not, whether you disagree with me or not, regardless of how you vote in this coming week, keep these things in mind. Proverbs 21. Who is truly in control of all things? Who truly controls the United States of America? Well, again, I think it's interesting that in Proverbs 21, we have a king who wrote these words. Verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, He turns it wherever He wishes. So whatever the outcome is in all these elections, whether we're talking about local things, state, or federal, know this, that God is still in control. If things don't go the way you want, God still rules over this nation. God still has the leader or leaders of our nations in His hand. And just like you don't see rivers that just go straight, you see them go this way, then they go that way and that way. Well, that happens with government too. And Solomon said, that's by God's doing, at least much of it is. I like what Daniel said to King Belshazzar, who evidently didn't realize these things. Belshazzar in Daniel chapter 5 is using the things of God to worship his idols. And of course, you know, that's where there's the handwriting on the wall. He's frightened by it. I believe it was his wife who said, you know, there was a man in the days of your father, your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, who could interpret things. Bring him in, he'll tell you what the writing means. So he comes in and he starts to tell King Belshazzar what it means it's written on the wall. And one of the things is this. He says that you have not honored the God who holds your breath in His hand and owns all your ways. And I would say that to our current president and whoever the next president is. God holds your breath in His hands and He owns all your ways. And we need to know that too. Because we may think that everything's dependent upon who our leader is. I know those things are important, and I'm not trying to minimize those things. I'm just trying to say there's something that's more important, and that's God, and that He runs all things. Another thing that I'd like you to keep in mind, if you're still in Proverbs, is Proverbs 23. Proverbs 23 reveals something about money that we all need to keep in mind. Wow. The stock market. What can you say about the stock market? I can't understand the people that run that thing. What makes them decide tomorrow to shoot the numbers up and the next day to make it go down? Wow. Why does anyone want to live that kind of life? But there's people that do. But even if not, is that the only place where money is so volatile? No. Before the stock market was ever invented, Proverbs 23 and verse 5 said this. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. Have you tried to catch a bird before? You know, I have. I think it was when I was a kid. Maybe I've tried as an adult. I don't know. Boy, it's hard to do. What happens? You know, that bird somehow is keeping an eye on you. And when that bird sees that you're making your way towards it, I don't care how fast you're going, it just flies away and just has a good old time and laughs its head off at you. And Solomon says, that's what riches do. Tomorrow, we could be on top of the world, and tomorrow, it could be all gone. And that's the last scripture that I want to bring up that says almost that same thing. And that's Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Again, with things that have been happening in the economy lately, boy, is there a lot of blame. We hear constant blame. It was this person or this party's fault. No, it was this person and this party's fault. But brethren, even if we have the perfect system and the perfect leaders, what is said here is still true. Ecclesiastes 7, 13 and 14. Consider the work of God. In other words, He is the one behind all this. For who can make straight what He has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. Man, enjoy it. But in the day of adversity, consider. Do some serious thinking. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. Because we're human like every other society has been in history. If we did have a president and everything went perfectly, if everything went exactly the way we wanted to, you know what we would do? He's a god. We would look at our president as a god. And he's not. That's what Solomon wrote here. We need to be considering that all humans have their faults and they're not gods. Only God is God and he's the one who's operating all things. So regardless again of what your positions might be on things, even if you think, well, I usually agree with Don, but today, man, he was really off on the things he had to say. Fine. But these last few passages, surely you would agree that our God is running everything. So keep those things in mind. However, what is political freedom without spiritual freedom? If we have political freedom like we do in America and how wonderful it is, what if I'm in bondage in the spirit because I've never been delivered from my sin? I'll die and have what I'm going to call eternal political bondage. And who wants that? We want freedom now, and but we especially want it later. Because if I don't have political freedom, but I have spiritual freedom, I've got everything. Are you still bound in sin and do you need to be released? Jesus wants to release you from that ball and chain today. If you want to turn from your sin today and you're ready to be baptized into Christ, please don't delay anymore. We're here to help you. Come forward now as we stand and sing.